Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon.
Peter, that shirt looks like a monkey stole it off somebody for you.
All right, I'll take that as a compliment, I guess.
All right, your choice.
Why does it look like a monkey?
I was just trying to get the hook in for the movie.
I
completely believe you stole it yourself.
Okay, because you're wearing a red shirt, too.
Oh, my God, we're doomed.
I get it. Yeah, the monkey.
Okay.
I thought I was more than a monkey, but...
End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the news, movies, and get jokes that we don't understand, which this week will be the new live-action Disney remake, Aladdin. That will be in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the latest movie news from the past week, including Batman. It is rumored that Robert Pattinson will be the next Dark Knight, and the internet is predictably upset. But should they be? And then we will discuss more new trailers from the last week, including the Terminator film, new film from the filmmaker of The Babadook, and a new movie from some guy named Tarantino? Did I pronounce that right? And then finally, the last recap of the final season of Game of Thrones you will ever need, and the answer to the question, was it really so bad? But first, Vanity Fair has done its usual pre-release... I was going to say expose, but it's not really an expose because nothing really gets exposed. But they do a cover story whenever it's getting close to a new Star Wars movie. And it is getting close to a new Star Wars movie. It's almost 6
closer
months away.
And closer. Yeah. Really? Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. December 20th is when Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, comes out. And so Vanity Fair had lots of cool-looking pictures, fancy things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, revealing a lot secretly, like which planets are going to be included and just a bunch of extra fun stuff. On the Vanity Fair, though, I most enjoyed the in-depth discussion about C-3PO and that actor.
Anthony Daniels.
Yeah, apparently he had the one line, like literally just two words, and he just couldn't memorize it. He just couldn't do it.
I mean, he wasn't a spring chicken when they made the first Star Wars.
He's a physical actor. So saying the one line, you know.
I mean...
I just thought his admittance of it was quite funny.
I mean, you know, they were reading Marlon Brando, his lines to him over an earpiece near the end. But I'm surprised he still gets into that suit.
Yeah. Well, they might have, you know, changed it a bit for him. But
well, they might, yeah, to make it a bit more accommodating. But, like, I'm kind of surprised that they still, like...
Mm-hmm. Still use him.
Shove him into the metal. Because, I mean, if you see the original... pictures from the set in 77 when they're shooting it, like in, I can't remember they're shooting, were they shooting in Egypt? I think somewhere in Northern Africa where they're shooting the Tatooine scenes. It did not look fun being in a shiny metal suit in the middle of the desert.
No, and he's probably boiling in there. Like, I mean, actually boiling.
Yeah, and you know, it looks uncomfortable.
I can't fathom it. It's good for him. And the guy replacing Chewbacca, I liked that talk too. That was a really good in-depth look to him. And how it was like confirmed to be okay through the old Chewbacca. May he rest in peace.
Yeah, Peter Mayhew, who passed away a couple of weeks ago, quite suddenly. There seems to be a lot of sudden deaths. Yeah. I mean, Peter Mayhew hasn't been healthy for a while. And if you've seen him I've seen him at a couple of different conventions, and he was like walking visibly, like, because he's so tall and he was so old, so he's like hunched over walking with a cane now. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, movement was difficult.
Well, he knew it too. That's why he retired from it.
Yeah,
even pre-death.
Right.
But yeah, he was phenomenal. So I'm glad that he had a part and who's going to be replacing him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad Chewbacca will still be in that world. My favorite character, probably. I am excited to see an even further in-depth look into his reaction post Han Solo. How many Chewbacca emotions will we get? You know? Like, we saw him cry in the other film, but, like, it's been probably a year or so. Has he dealt with it? How's the Chewbacca doing? I just hope he's okay.
Well, yeah, it's... yeah, there's a lot that has to sort of go on in this movie, and it seems like they're throwing more stuff at... Like, it had a picture of Carrie Russell's character,
yep,
who is, like, a... one of the Helmet Head characters. Mm-hmm. What's the character's name? I actually took the time and effort to write it down. Zori Bliss, which sounds bizarre, but okay. And then there was also a picture of Richard E. Grant as a new character, as General Pride.
That'll be cool. I like them little kind of tidbits hidden like that. He's not going to be like a central character, I don't think, but it'll be a fun little appearance.
No, it's it's like he was... It's like it's way past due for him to play an Imperial general.
Yeah. Well, it's also like they're just doing that more, right? We'll be talking about it later, but Game of Thrones, like they just got that one really famous NFL guy just to be an extra. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I found it interesting. I found a couple of things interesting. It seemed like, I don't know if it was on purpose, quote unquote on purpose, but there weren't any like pictures with Kelly Marie Tran in them, which I find kind of auspicious, or not auspicious, but maybe suspicious, because of, you know, how she became like a target for all the toxic fans after Last Jedi, like basically forcing her off social media so she didn't have to deal with them. Although she is in the movie, and then she was also at Star Wars Celebration where they unveiled the new trailer, the only trailer they've released so far. So, I mean, she's in it, but
there might have been some cuts if she's not included in Vanity Fair.
I mean, that's the question. I don't know if they've gone that far, but I do find it kind of...
Peculiar.
Good word. And I also was interested in the revelation that J.J. Abrams said that this was a little bit more planned out
than the previous one?
That the trilogy was planned out, more planned out than it seemed, because it seemed like it was a typical sort of Force Awakens is the typical J.J. Abrams joint where he like throws a lot of stuff at the wall and then, you know, says peace out and then lets everybody pick up the pieces. And then, because I think one of the things that angers people so much, aside from the diversity on display in Last Jedi, is how much of a departure Last Jedi is. It's like a real kind of standalone
film. Almost conclusionary of a lot of the questions people had and just a lot of the things that are a huge part of the Star Wars story.
And he like threw like Captain Phasma, who cares?
Yeah.
She's gone. Mm-hmm. Rey's parents, who cares? They were nobodies. And that's one of the things actually I'm really concerned. We talked about, I think when Candace was here in the past, one of the past episodes, is that I hope that's not something they quote-unquote retcon. It's like, oh no, she just thinks her parents were nobodies, but they're really the king and queen of Albatross 7 or whatever. I don't know.
But you don't want that? I liked how her parents were just regular humans, you know?
To me, it defeats the purpose. And one of the things that...
More relatable to the viewers.
Right. One of the things that did give me comfort was J.J. Abrams said that The Last Jedi and Rian Johnson pushed him to make bolder choices than he did in Force Awakens. And I remember J.J. Abrams said that he wished he had the script for The Last Jedi so that he could direct it.
Yeah.
So that does give me some confidence that J.J. isn't just going to walk back like, but I introduced Gleep Glop 7 to be this important figure. And it's like, no, I don't care about random Gleep Glops.
It'll be very firm and well-made like the first one.
I
don't think
it'll be well-made for sure.
I don't think it'll be like The Return of the Jedi where there will be a huge amount of division. I think everyone will just love it. And I don't love Star Wars that much, so I don't think it's optimism. I don't know. From the commercials, from the way J.J. Abrams, like you said, has dealt with it more, the Vanity Fair, they seem to know more so what was going on and how to make those fans happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that's not making fans happy is who they might be casting as the next Batman. So it's not confirmed. It's kind of still in the rumor mill, although it says that he is the first choice by Matt Reeves, who's directing the next Batman movie, which is supposed to be in theaters on June 25th, 2021. So, you know, if you're planning 2 years ahead. But Robert Pattinson, and a lot of people may only know Robert Pattinson from Twilight.
Wow, that's pretty much it.
Well, he's
Are you going to say Cosmopolitan or whatever it's called?
Cosmopolis. He was in Cosmopolis. Cosmopolis came out like between a couple of Twilight films.
Yeah.
This is what he's been up to since Twilight. He's done Maps of the Stars, which was, I think, another Cronenberg film. It was Cronenberg or Nguyen. It was one of the two. Maps of the Stars, Queen of the Desert, which I'm not familiar with. Childhood of a Leader, which is kind of like a Hitler parable. Mm-hmm. Lost City of Zed. Daniel High Life, and his most recent one was The Lighthouse, which was at Cannes, where he's like playing a lighthouse keeper with Willem Dafoe. So he's like an exceptionally busy actor. Well, I mean, that's like...
Mm-hmm. And that one that you mentioned that you said you didn't know, that was directed by Werner Herzog.
Yes,
the Werner Herzog. And it's got a whopping 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. And the Cronenberg one, it's not one of his best films, you know? So I'm just saying, like, these are all during or post-Twilight, and none of them live up to his success from Twilight.
Yeah, I mean, what is success? Like, is it like Money in the Bank? Or is it like personal accomplishment of testing yourself with good directors?
In a lot of art films after, right?
Yeah.
But they all got really bad reviews. They're the worst films from those artistic directors, like Herzog and Cronenberg. Well, so I don't think
Herzog's an acquired taste.
I don't know. I think Grizzly Man, everybody would love Grizzly Man if they watched that.
For his narrative ones, I mean.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, and sometimes you get My Son, What Have You Done?
Yeah, or that classic of him eating his own shoe.
Yes.
That was amazing. But you know, I know. I shouldn't be using Herzog against him. No, he tried really hard to do some like great, you know, artistic films.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people did love that Cronenberg one. But like you said, that was right before, it was the same year as The Finale. So
yeah, but my point is just that, you know, if you're, the same thing happened to Kristen Stewart to an extent, where people were judging her on Twilight and maybe ignoring, because she's been a working actor since she was a kid, so ignoring what came before. And if you look at like the blockbusters, quote unquote, mm-hmm. You have Robert Pattinson, Harry Potter, and Twilight. You have Kristen mm-hmm. Stewart, Twilight, in that Snow White movie with Chris Hemsworth as the huntsman, that they made a stupid sequel to that didn't have Snow White.
And she's going to be the main one in the upcoming Charlie's Angels. Which
yes.
I think is a little weird.
Also alongside Princess Jasmine.
Yeah.
That's a weird connection. But my point is, like, I remember when the movie came out where she was playing, not Pat Benatar, Joan Jett, where it was the biopic about the Joan Jett's band.
Yeah.
But everyone's like, oh, but she's horrible. She's in Twilight. And it's like, no, it turns out to be a pretty good movie she gives a pretty good performance. And I think people are all too willing to judge things based on Twilight, which doesn't exactly test your toolbox as an actor.
I guess. I am not basing it around that because I didn't love Twilight, but I'm a Taylor Lautner man. I love that. Jeez. I love that Taylor Lautner. I want me some more of that Taylor Lautner.
Really? All right.
Well, he's
you're
just
team
he's
Jacob.
A, he's a, yeah, I'm team Jacob. First off, werewolves are better. Secondly, a bunch of the Sandman films, right? And that British show Cuckoo. Taylor Lautner is so good in that. But yeah, no, I've yet to see anything I enjoy with Robert Pattinson. And Kristen Stewart, a very small amount. So I don't know. I'm not looking forward to it. I'll tell you what. I don't think it's that much different than Ben Affleck as Batman. It was a little weird, too.
Well, the reaction of Ben Affleck was...
He's more like...
It was crazy. Like, I think people were... I guess because his last superhero role was Daredevil, and not a lot of people liked Daredevil. I understand that.
I liked it as
the theatrical cut, the director's cut is superior.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want to go by maybe what you've seen. A lot of people probably saw that theatrical cut, and Daredevil wasn't the greatest movie to begin with.
Mm.
But, I mean, since then, you had Ben Affleck doing The Town... Argo, like things
Gone
he's
Girl.
Directed. Yeah.
Oh, no, that was before, but yeah.
I mean, it was the same ballpark. You can make the argument, Gone Girl. You had like Hollywoodland where he played George mm-hmm. Reeves. But, you know, he had done like all this like sort of career rehabilitation, mm-hmm. and then they announced him as Batman, and everyone's like, this is the preposterous. But of course, you can also go back to 1989 when they cast Michael Keaton as Batman.
Yeah, or
there was no
George
internet,
Clooney.
So. George Clooney's debatable. And even George Clooney will mock his casting as Batman.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you go back to Michael Keaton. There was no internet around at the time. But newspapers covered the outrage.
Yeah, the disappointment.
Right? And it was, like, before one thing had been seen. And, you know, remember, this is before, like, the internet. So this is before everyone had, like, a camera in their back pocket. And they could take spy photos from the set and spy videos and post them on, you know, Just Jarred or wherever. And so there was like so very little for people to go on. So it wasn't until like the trailer for Batman came out a couple of months before Batman itself came out, and people were like, oh, holy crap, maybe Michael Keaton might not be so bad. And I think people got that feeling too after Batman versus Superman, and you have Ben Affleck as like probably one of the best parts of that movie.
Yeah, he was great.
Or at least maybe one of the few redeeming parts of that movie is that casting.
Mm-hmm. I thought Henry Cavill was great. But
Henry Cavill is...
he is Superman for me.
He's a great actor. The thing that I think that makes Justice League okay is the fact that they finally let Henry Cavill show some charm and enthusiasm being Superman and not being like this like dour character.
Yeah, just basic action, dude.
But putting that aside, speaking of petitions, there are petitions out asking Warner Brothers to stop.
See, I'm not for that.
I'd like to propose a counter petition just to troll these people.
Yeah,
I want to put a petition on change.org that demands that Warner Brothers hire Kristen Stewart as Catwoman.
That would be amazing. That would be incredible. So you're pro this? You're pro Pattinson?
I wouldn't mind seeing Pattinson. Like, okay. I've seen enough of him in other things to know that, you know, he's got some talent. And he's done the DiCaprio thing. Like, right after Titanic, DiCaprio went for like indie movies, smaller movies, and it's, you know, he kind of ran away from it. And I think Robert Pattinson's kind of done the same thing. So I mean, if he's interested enough that he's like negotiating to, then there must be, I'm interested to know like what's in this Batman script, because from what I've read, it's going to be like a callback to like film noir kind of Batman, sort of like ground level, gritty, Dark Knight kind of thing.
I guess
not necessarily big, bombastic.
I guess he could go about that. he could be really stern and kind of, you know, dark and such, but just the way he looks and the way he goes about it, always not in a tough guy way, but more like a like emo dude kind of way, you know. I don't know. I just
maybe. I mean, he's done like Rover and things where he's kind of played tougher, so I'm willing to give it a chance.
Yeah, I'll still watch it. I'll still watch it.
Yeah, well, you got a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, only if Kristen Stewart is Catwoman. Only chance. And yeah, if it's a couple of years, even
you know
though
what?
I don't like him, I think they'll be able to, yeah, get Pattinson.
If she's
ready
great
for the
in
role.
Charlie's Angels and can, like, is,
yeah,
is,
find out.
Like with like action stuff, who knows? Maybe like, well, people would get on my side. But for right now, I just want to troll these people.
Yeah.
It's like, let's do a Twilight reunion Batman movie.
Even though I was a bit disappointed with the Pattinson, I was more disappointed with the huge reaction, including the change.org and things you were talking about.
Mm. Well, we might get into more of that later.
we're
going to take a quick musical break first, though. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM. And we're about to enter a whole new world of Terminator films. Because that is one of the newest trailers that came out this week, is for Terminator 6, Dark Fate, which follows Terminator 5, Genesis, which follows Terminator Salvation, which follows Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, which follows the movie that should have ended it all, Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, does it have 100%?
Deservedly.
It's rare to get 100%, even like for like really popular films. Like I think even Casablanca is like 98%, 99%.
And I think Godfather 2 is only 99% or something.
Sacrilege. Yeah. Let's find the 1%.
Yeah.
No, it's... I hate to say that the trailer kind of got its claws into me, because it is interesting to like what would bring Linda Hamilton back. James Cameron's back, but I mean, James Cameron also gave his like seal of approval to Terminator Genesis.
He's not directing it, is he?
But he's like a kind of like a producer, like he's okay. like a creative producer.
Yeah.
He's not just slapping his name on it like they do for like other remakes where they slap on John Carpenter's name or something. I also like Mackenzie Davis as an actress.
What other works has she been in?
She was in *Halt and Catch Fire*, the AMC TV show, and she was in *Blade Runner 2049*. Mm. She's been in a couple other things, but I think that's probably where most people know her from. But I mean, she has an interesting physicality. I'm interested to know like how they're going to work in old Arnold this time.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, other than that, I mean, it's also Tim Miller, the director of *Deadpool*.
Okay, so now, okay, that gives me a pinch more faith for it.
But, I mean, I think in a couple of months, walking out of this movie, it's
good. You think it'll be...
It'll be the same thing. It's just... I probably gave Terminator Genesis probably more credit than most people, but even I...
yeah, I didn't...
Even I walked out of that, like, profoundly disappointed.
Yeah. And it didn't make its money back. And this one hasn't really gotten... It's gotten a bit more buzz, but it hasn't gotten a ridiculous amount, you know?
No.
I don't remember seeing it ever number one or trending that high up on Twitter.
No.
I don't know. But you said, like, James Cameron and people are putting more work into it.
Well,
because non-popularity doesn't mean it will be as bad as Genesis. So we can still give it some faith.
I know, but James Cameron also said, Genesis is the Terminator movie I'd make now. And it's no, they drove a dump truck full of money up to your house for you to say that.
Yeah.
Or they built you a new sub or something, you know what? Because that's what James Cameron does with his money. So,
yeah.
Is build a new sub. Once Upon a Time, the full trailer was released, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And it gave us a pretty good idea of, I think almost too much of an idea of how the various stories are interconnected.
Sort of, yeah. It showed a lot. It didn't show Bruce Lee's character again. So this will be a little
there's
secrets
like quick
when clips. It comes to that.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing him at all in the newest trailer.
No, there was a couple of quick shots.
Was there? Oh, okay. But no dialogue like the first one, so.
No. So that is probably one of my favorite scenes in that trailer. Where it's like,
and no lines that I could think of from Charles Manson. So I think there's still
I don't think
maybe like
he
one
spoke.
Word. Or, yeah, but so there's still a lot of questions of how will these actors be? How will their performance of these very important characters be?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still not 100% sure what the plot is.
That's yeah.
I guess it's cops deciding to not be cops, actor and stunt double. Not wanting to do that and being
It seems like Brad Pitt's character ends up at Spawn Ranch.
Yeah,
having been lured there by Margaret Qualley,
mm-hmm.
who may be one of the more infamous members of the Manson family. I don't know if they've named her character, but anyway, Leonardo DiCaprio lives like next door to Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate, and I actually like Margot Robbie a lot as Sharon Tate.
Oh yeah,
she
looks phenomenal.
She's also exceptionally
like
charming.
Phenomenal,
that,
yeah.
There, where she walks up and says she's in the movie, and then goes in and watches the audience. So that's a doubly tough role because she's not only just playing Sharon Tate, she's also kind of recreating Sharon Tate's
sister is giving it.
Yeah,
full
that's
approval.
True. So,
Roman Polanski's wife is not. She's not okay with this jazz.
His current wife?
No, his. Yeah, maybe his current wife. I don't know. I didn't read that enough, but I know. I know some people are upset that Roman Polanski was not asked, and it's like it's Roman Polanski.
Well, he was probably not going to be able to.
Yeah, exactly.
Come to Hollywood. To
yeah,
take
or
part
contact
in
or anything.
Yeah,
he's on escape, sort of.
Yeah, he's a fugitive. From
yeah,
justice,
he's a fugitive.
Technically.
Yeah, so, yeah, no. Sharon Tate's sister, that's way more important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad she was okay with that, because from the trailers, it looks like a phenomenal performance.
I could see an Oscar nomination.
I was just about to say that, yep.
I'm still in to see what happens with it. I'd be interested to see if maybe they've let Tarantino maybe take too much creative ownership, because he kind of had the Weinsteins to sort of
yeah
bounce off of before.
I don't know. I didn't see any shots of just feet kind of doing stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was like minute-long shots of just Uma Thurman's feet just moving. So I don't know. I get what you mean. If it did go a little too Tarantino hardcore, I'd be okay with it. His stuff can get it fun.
Well, we'll see.
You know? I do want to say one of the best things for me is I was worried it was going to be based fully around, mm-hmm. you know, actual cops that were dealing with the Manson thing. But no, it's fully original,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Loosely based off of Burt Reynolds and his stunt double.
Mm-hmm.
But still original characters, fresh, new, and written. You know, classic Tarantino style.
I think Burt Reynolds' last role in this,
isn't he? Oh, is he? I didn't know. Yeah, I think so.
He's in it. Might be his last. Anyway.
Yeah.
That brings us to The Nightingale, which is from the Babadook director, Jennifer Kent. Her follow-up to that movie, which looks kind of like the female version of The Revenant.
Yeah.
With some revenge in the backwoods.
It looked a little spooky.
Yeah.
I got a little spooked.
I've heard things that indicate that parts of it can be fairly upsetting.
Yeah.
Which sold me.
Yeah, no, it'll intrigue me enough that, yeah, I'll see it because of that. But based on who it's by, what was the name of the other film?
Babadook.
Babadook. That class. Yeah. I loved that one. So, yeah, I think it'll be great.
Yeah. So, it you know, there's going to be some interesting gender dynamics in it. There's interesting racial dynamics because the person she, mm-hmm. I guess, she meets up with is a black slave. And there was, there's a scene where, like, they're eating and she's eating at a table with everybody else and he's eating on the floor. And it's like, wow. I mean, of course, like, black people are treated horribly when mm-hmm. slavery is in effect. But, I mean, to sort of just put that out there.
Yeah, they conveyed
given the racially
what,
charged
unfortunately,
environment.
Was
yeah.
What did happen in the past in a great
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping for it. I might wait for it on Netflix or Blu-ray. I can get a little too spooked in theaters.
It's spooky in those
it's
theaters.
It's like those hand dryers, the new hand dryers. It's just too loud.
Really?
So I can't handle it. Yeah, like the hand dryers in Tim Hortons with like the tubes that just blast that air out. I can't handle that. It's like horror films. I can't handle that. It's too loud. Wow. It scares me.
We're getting a unique glimpse inside Peter's mind.
I don't think
episode.
I'm the only person, but yeah. If you're listening out there and you agree with me, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Speaking of potentially messed up racial dynamics, Game of Thrones aired its final episode a couple of weeks ago. They aired the special wrap-up documentary, mm-hmm. The Last Watch.
I watched that, yeah. That was.
Did you enjoy it?
I thought it was good. I think it could have been an hour and a half. I don't know if it needed to be 2 hours, but no, it was really good. There was a lot of really cool in-depth looks into extras and people like that, you know, sound design.
I think the flashbacks to the costume. First table read.
That was my favorite,
with all
the
baby faces.
Varys? Varys' reaction?
Yeah.
That was hilarious. And then they cut it out. I don't know. It would have been cool if we saw him, if he react even further, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Daenerys' reaction. Yeah. No, I'd say...
You mean Emilia Clarke.
Emilia... Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean Emilia Clarke. Yeah, her reaction was cool.
So what did you think of the last episode?
Honestly,
make something up.
I really liked it. I quite enjoyed it.
I kind of liked it too.
I've never been a Daenerys person.
Mm.
I've never liked her. Mm-hmm. I've always loved all the Starks. Even from the beginning, I loved Sansa. So the way it ended, it perfect for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think a lot of people complaining that Daenerys didn't deserve that, you got to rewatch. And I've rewatched it like 6 times. Daenerys, I understand why people loved her. You know, she helped feminism and just society in general, like, a lot.
Right.
But well, she did. But from the very beginning, she was evil. She straight up in the first season with her eyes open, even the Dothraki are trying to close her eyes. She's just watching her brother just burn to death, right? In such
crown.
A messed up yeah. way. And yes, he was a bad brother. But, like, someone with a heart, even if he wasn't, like...
She didn't name a dragon after him later.
Yeah. Yeah, and just, like, her burning down that whole kind of huge place for the wives of the Dothraki.
Right.
Her just burning all that down. And just, ugh. And her way of torturing and dealing with the one, guru or whatever she was that tried to help her in the first season.
Right.
Yeah, there's just, she's been bad the whole time, so I was okay with that.
I don't know if she's been evil.
No, not necessarily evil, but she's been Targaryen for sure.
Oh, for sure.
She's been a classic Targaryen.
There's context in that. I think if she were a man doing some of the things she'd done, it would be seen as understandable given the relative morality of the world.
Yeah.
But I think, first of all, I agree that I knew, just dramatically speaking, you weren't going to get any of the obvious people on the Iron Throne. You weren't going to get a Daenerys ending. You weren't going to get a Jon Snow
ending. Yeah, I knew there was
going to... You weren't going to get a Cersei ending. Mm-hmm. And then when a couple of episodes before the end, when Tormund Giantsbane says to Jon Snow, "You got the true north in
you,"
I thought, okay, he's going to go north of the wall and this is all done.
Really? See, no, that was the biggest surprise for me. I did not expect that.
I didn't know if he'd go voluntarily or if they'd make him go, but
yeah.
I figured, Joanna Robinson, who's as close as you can get to an expert on the subject, she writes for Vanity Fair. Mm-hmm. She wrote a great article about the comparisons between Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones.
Yes.
How the Iron Throne is like the Ring of Power. All these people are trying to possess it, and it sort of drives them mad eternally.
Mm-hmm.
How in the end, there's a character who saves the world but can't be a part of it, and that's Frodo, and that's also very much Jon Snow. Mm-hmm. Jon Snow saved the world, but
100%.
He can't live in it, and he has
to go north. He's just that dude. He always has been. He does it for the good.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about whether doing for the good will be good for him. He just wants to do good.
And I like...
He wants to make his papa Ned Stark proud.
Yeah. And I did like the ending with Sansa being the queen of Independent North.
Oh, that was amazing. Honest, people were upset she didn't become the full queen of the King's Landing, or Daenerys didn't, but I think for the whole Westeros, that is a major and good step forward. And
yeah.
she looked amazing. Her hair and what she was wearing was just such a perfect look for Queen of the North. And then them shouting Queen of the North was gold. So that was amazing.
I had strong vibes, because there are sort of real world allegories in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
There's a strong Queen Elizabeth I vibe. I mean, with the red hair being, I think it's sort of implied that she's going to be a lone ruler. Yep. She's not going to seek marriage. She's going to be quite content to be Queen of the North and be that strong woman. Although I do understand that, some people have been saying too that was kind of a saving face measure, because you have the two other more powerful women. What I found interesting about going into the final seasons of Game of Thrones was that it was a very male-centric show. It's about, different male characters fighting each other to be who's king. And then when all of them are eliminated in the end, you're left with basically three powerful women standing with Sansa, Cersei, and Daenerys.
Yeah.
And that gets undermined somewhat in the last season, and I get that. But
you mean too much, though? It's kind of too in your face, the female roles?
No, not the female power. I think that it the fact that you only get Sansa in the end, who's queen of the independent North, right? Yeah.
Well, Arya's ending is pretty independent.
I like Arya's ending too. She's off to discover America.
Yeah. I wish Gendry had joined her.
Yeah.
But no, it was great. And one thing I was thinking about, maybe he's just being a nice brother, right? But Bran knows everything. He could see pretty much everything, right? So he would know if her...
What's west of Westeros?
Yeah, so he would know if there was nothing and just call it Arya, no, there's nothing.
Yeah.
So he knows there's probably something, and that it's going to be Arya finding it. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you could be right.
Yeah. I do think there were some flaws with the final episode,
yes.
though. That huge gap, Jon Snow does what he does to Daenerys. Stab, stab, stab. And then it's a month later, right after that. I didn't love that enough. I didn't even realize
if
it
was
a bit in.
Only a
month. I know, because
it seemed like spring.
And they just did it.
So it was like the shortest winter ever.
Tyrion's beard's a bit draggier.
Yeah, it's. I think the problem I had with the last couple of seasons on the whole is that they, I think if they had done two full 10 episode seasons and given things to breathe. Given time to sort of see Daenerys' fall,
mm-hmm.
to sort of see a Jaime Brienne relationship rather than just being one and done after an episode.
I'm so glad Brienne got that.
That is one
she's
of
been craving that,
my most favorite scenes ever. Is when he knights her It is.
Yeah, because that was like a legit. It was a real.
Yeah.
When Daenerys knighted Gendry, I was like, yo, you're not being knighted, bro. This is not you getting knighted. I wish Jaime had done it for him, too. But I okay, it definitely deserves better reviews than it got. I do think there's even a few critics whose views as fans took over their view as reviewers. That's
It wasn't a fan ending, and there's a big difference between what you want as a fan and what is like dramatically necessary to sort of wrap up a plot. And I think people forget that a lot. And you know, for people who want like a do-over. Well, sorry, that's kind of not how this
works. Yeah, that was a little rude.
And you'll always have the books.
Yeah, exactly. Where are they at? Honestly, I'm a book fan. I've read them all. I was hoping, like, you know, 1201 right after it aired or whatever. R.R. Martin would, like, tweet, yo, book's coming. But no, I didn't get that.
I hope when he does announce the Winds of Winter are ready, I hope he does release that tweet, yo, book's coming.
Yeah.
But we'll have to leave that there. We're going to talk to you about another Magic Kingdom.
Ooh.
Called Agrippa. After this musical break, you're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Out and left the car there. Walked through days and nights and years. Close my eyes and find the beaches. There I waited a few more years. Show the blades could be.
Hey, can you make me a prince?
There is a lot of gray area in make me a prince. I could just make you a prince.
Oh, no.
Right, you'll be snuggled up with that dude for the rest of your life.
Yo, y'all see my palace?
Be specific with your words. The deal is in the detail.
Got it.
Which I don't really understand, because if she already likes you, why change?
I told you, she has to marry a prince.
I just want to go home, man.
Okay, I can do that.
And that was a clip from Aladdin. It is the new film from Guy Ritchie somehow. And it stars Mina Massoud, Naomi Scott, Marwan Kenzari, Naveed Nagaban, Nassim Pedrad, and Will Smith. And if you weren't already aware, it is the remake of the 1992 animated film, also called Aladdin. I think I can best sum up my feelings is that... Mina Massoud, who plays Aladdin, I think he's a star. Naomi Scott.
Oh, 100%.
Who plays Jasmine, I think she's a star.
Yeah.
I think Will Smith should have made the transition to musicals a long time ago.
Oh, he's phenomenal.
He's clearly having fun.
Yeah.
But this is an empty, soulless corporate exercise where it just basically...
I didn't find it soulless, but I get what you mean. It was pretty basic plot wise.
I got
attached enough though to, the genie and Jasmine, to be able to enjoy it to that degree. But unlike the first one, Jafar is kind of boring.
Jafar is the worst part of this.
Yeah, he's the worst villain.
Like, no disrespect to. I gotta look up his name.
And his parent,
Marwan Kenzari.
Yes.
No disrespect to him, because I think
he could be good in other roles.
He could be good in other roles. And there were times, like, they introduced his background to Jafar, like, he was a street hustler once himself. He was a thief. And he sort of, like, worked his way up to being, like, the right hand of the Sultan, which sounds like a hella interesting backstory for Jafar. But I don't get a sinister vibe from him.
No. Not scary whatsoever.
No, and I recognize that when you're working in animation, you can do the things to make someone look sinister. Mm-hmm. Like the original Jafar, he's tall, lanky, his eyes are close together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just looking at himself, that guy's the bad guy. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately for Marwan Kenzari, unless he was like standing there shouting, like, give me all the power.
He's just like, no, you're a dude.
Yeah.
Or like a really kind of like... pretentious aristocrat, you know?
Yeah. It was like the Downton Abbey version of Jafar.
He didn't scare me or make me laugh, which like is Jafar in the
which
original.
Is weird because I like the take on Iago in this. Like, Iago has kind of like a sinister edge.
Yeah.
Which I like. Like, it's because Gilbert Godfrey's the voice of Iago. And,
oh, you're talking about the parrot. Yeah, the parrot. Was literally about to mention him. Yeah, where's that Gilbert Godfrey? But no, the parrot was okay. I could have gone with a bit more comedy in the parrot. But yeah, the parrot was a better actor.
Gilbert Godfrey's living comfortable thanks to Affleck. fair but true. But yeah, like, Jafar's kind of the weakest part of this.
Yep. And he's a major character, so.
Yeah.
That it makes sense that it felt a bit more bland to you. Or maybe not bland, but more not in depth enough.
Well, that's not the, like, there aren't many departures. It's kind of like they took the original script and just made it with live action people. And it's, you know, there are some slight adjustments, like,
yeah, and they were adjustments that, although slight, I think had a pretty major difference.
Yeah, I think there's one in particular I'm thinking about that it's about Jasmine wanting to be Sultan.
And she gets it.
And yeah, at the end, she makes like this impassioned speech because the guards turn on the Sultan and side with Jafar because mm-hmm. he makes a wish to be Sultan. And she makes this impassioned speech about recognizing that honor is not the same as duty. And at the end, the Sultan recognizes that, you know, you have shown like rare wisdom and courage. And, you've shown that it doesn't matter that we haven't had a woman Sultan before. You should be Sultan. Correctly.
Well, it's the same for president, right?
Right. But having I do like that angle a lot. I do like because in the cartoon it comes from like the Sultan fixes it so she can marry Aladdin.
Yeah, and then Aladdin's a male.
But in this,
the
consequence of her becoming Sultan is that she can choose who she wants to marry.
Exactly.
And that flows a lot better from like the gender dynamics point of view. But
yeah, see, there was a couple additions like that made me still glad I saw it. Mm-hmm. What's her name from New Girl? I really like Navid.
Yeah.
What was her character's name?
Nassim Pendrad.
Yeah. I really like that. I like that little story. Because the genie, although it was Robin Williams, like nothing could beat that, right?
No.
It was straight up comedy. I felt maybe a pinch more attached to this genie, Will Smith, or at least viewed him as me viewing him gave me more emotions about what was going on. So I love that little love interest, and it was good to see that he gets her and he gets to move on in his life with her, and it's like good. You know, my visions of the genie's life are concluded in a nice way. He got a full storyline. It's not all about you, Aladdin. It's not all about you. And I like that, and I really did.
It's
And there were some differences. He didn't do all the wild, crazy, fast talk, little Robin Williams stuff, but he'd do some more. You know, that one scene where, like, Aladdin walks in and he's just doing some workouts and some cool Will Smithy stuff like that. Like Robin Williams, he's being the true comedic – he's being himself.
They turned the genie to his talents, which is important. Robin Williams – was always going to loom large over this.
Oh, of course.
Because I think, if I remember correctly, is that they brought him in and they pretty much had to like reanimate the genie from scratch.
Because he just improvised a lot.
Because he just riffed. So, I mean, there's a certain ownership for that. And it was always going to be daunting for anyone to take. And I always thought Will Smith was an interesting choice.
Oh, yeah.
But after the genie introduction song, You've Never Had a Friend Like Me, I kind of forgot about Robin Williams.
You mean In the Cave, that song within the cave? Oh, that was phenomenal.
Because
when he gets Aladdin to start dancing with him, the choreography there and just the way it looks, beautiful.
Right.
And yes, same here. Better than the cartoon Aladdin. Better than the animated one, I thought.
I'm not saying it was better. I'm saying they managed to make me forget about Robin Williams.
I'm not saying Will Smith's better. I mean, that specific song was done better.
Because
nothing can be a Robin Williams band.
Right, but, you know, because I forgot, but somebody reminded me, there's like a full like Jack Nicholson impression in that. It's like, how are you doing an impression of Jack Nicholson like 1,000 years before he was born? That's crazy. But it's attenuated to Will Smith's skill set, which is his warmth, his charm, his obvious musical talents, and not necessarily like the big show, the big performance, which I think Robin Williams
did. Yeah, it was a lot more wild.
Yeah, and I do like that there was a nice arc for the genie, and it wasn't just about
Aladdin.
Well, I was going to say, it just wasn't about like getting to the final wish where Aladdin would wish the genie his freedom, and that's kind of like the be-all. The genie has something to live on, and also that we're talking about the end and the spoilers and everything, but I did like how...
it's a remake.
They did slam the... like, he doesn't have genie powers still.
No, yeah, he's just
after Aladdin wishes him his freedom, which, you know...
Yeah, that's what I really liked. That was something extra for the genie. A nice little conclusion for his storyline. And it also, because it started that way and ended that way, it made me kind of view him, and now I'm still thinking about it, I viewed the genie as more of the main character than Aladdin.
It is interesting.
I'm a Smith fan, though, so...
because...
everyone is,
Will
right?
Smith... It's weird. It's weird for Will Smith to let someone else take the wheel.
Yeah,
because you know he also has another movie coming out where he plays two characters.
Oh yeah,
but it's I did like that the sort of the cold open with him on the boat, and I was like, well, isn't Will Smith the genie? What is this?
Yeah, I had some questions, but they get answered
right off the bat. But I like. I call this a soulless corporate exercise. I mean, I would say
soulless, but I get your view.
It's empty. I would say, like, the point of this is, I think, because of the actors and because of, I think, Guy Ritchie, everybody's sort of taken this seriously, I think it manages to overcome that sort of baseline that Disney was like, you know what? We'll remake Aladdin. It'll be live action. And you know what? That's just money in the bank. Because I think that's what drives a lot of this. Aladdin is also more of a, like, these Disney remakes seem to come in sort of two streams. You have the ones who sort of like Cinderella or Beauty and the Beast that kind of lean heavily into doing like sort of the shot by shot sort of just with live action people thing. And then you have the ones like Dumbo and like, I don't know. I was also thinking of Alice in Wonderland, but they're both Tim Burton joints, you know, where it's just like, we're going to mix it up. Maleficent's another good one. Who asked for a sequel to that? We were talking about trailers, and there was a sequel for the Maleficent trailer.
Really?
And I was like, who the hell asked for this?
Yeah, jeez.
except for maybe Angelina Jolie's accountant. But, yeah, like those movies try to shake it up. And I'm not sure which is better. Like, doing like a really great remake that's basically a photocopy in live action of the original animator, or like going to the wall, trying new stuff, trying crazy things. And I think my decision is just like, why can't we just make original things? But having said that,
I thought this one had enough originality that was added to it. Like we were talking about her getting thrown and Will Smith's little extras. And I thought, just in general, the fact it was live action allowed Disney to just play around with the beauty, with the landscape, with the CGI. And it was, I think, one of the best Disney films when it comes to that in a long time. If you see that in the big screen IMAX, the beautiful looks of the town and everything.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's remarkable, yeah.
And I like that it's all big colors.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
It's all like just bright and colorful.
Mm-hmm.
Guy Ritchie seems to...
Choreography, phenomenal for all the dancing.
Oh, yeah. Like, it seemed like Guy Ritchie approached it like, I want to make these, like, Bollywood numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, which makes sense.
Yeah, the scene where they... where Aladdin as the prince comes into the city, it's like this big, huge number that would not be missing outside of, like, one of those Bollywood movies with, like, fan dancing and flower petals and kicks and people running upstairs. It's amazing to behold, and you really kind of get into those sequences. Mm-hmm. But I think when I think of like walking out of the film when it's over, not walking out in the middle, but when it's over, it's just what you're left with is like, did I get anything out of this that I couldn't have got out of just watching the thing on Blu-ray at home?
I got a fun experience. Oh, seeing this one in theaters, I think, is a must. Okay. I think those visuals were outstanding. I'll tell you what, I thought it was better than any Disney film in a long while. Like, the Star Wars and the Avengers, they're great visuals, but we've seen it all. There's been so many of them, right? We haven't seen this world since 1992, and they redid it in a stunning way. And I just want to say, I totally get what you're saying about the characters, because, you know, Jafar, But I Will Smith, the genie, Naomi Scott, Princess Jasmine, and Mena Massad as Aladdin. I thought just those three were enough for me to stay focused and to, after not regret seeing it, but thinking, hey, that was okay. I'm glad I did that, you know?
No, and
I'll never rewatch this, probably, but I liked it.
No, and I agree with all of that.
Mm-hmm. If you're a Disney fan, I think you should see it. If you're an Aladdin fan, if you're a Will Smith fan,
well, I think if like the benefit of this is like maybe it does a lot to sort of promote more diversity. Because I read somebody say
on
Twitter. I wasn't
even thinking about that, but yeah, that's a pretty.
But I read somebody on Twitter say like one of the benefits coming out of Aladdin will be is that, you know, a lot of studios will be looking for a Southeast Asian part in their films for Naomi Scott. And actually, one of the things I did after I came home from Aladdin is I watched her Power Rangers, which she was in, the Power Rangers remake. She doesn't stand out in that movie, but I mean, that's kind of glum and dour, but
she stood out in this.
She's definitely stood out in this. One of the things I forgot about Power Rangers is that Darcy Montgomery, who plays like the bully in Stranger Things season 2, is like the Red Ranger in that, which I found kind of off-putting.
She as a singer, better than the original one.
Yeah.
I thought her singing was
I'd have to
phenomenal.
Go back and watch the original.
I rewatched it late last year for the one class. So I think if you did too, you'd agree that her singing is
what class
a lot
did you
better.
Rewatch Aladdin for?
Some film history one. It had a specific name.
I'm just curious. Like it wasn't like
no, my paper was a focus on 90s films. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, like so, yeah, let's go back to the tweet. Somebody said like they're going to be looking at like South Asian roles for a South Asian actress for
that's
her.
Good.
And I think I think she deserves another show. I would say Mena Massoud also should get a showcase.
Oh,
like,
I was
necessarily
gonna say, I thought he was great. I'll tell you the one. Yeah. Okay. As the prince or whatever he turned himself into, when he walks in for the first time as that prince, and everyone's like looking at him and cheering, his facial reaction of just not like being awkward, not knowing what's going on, what he's supposed to do. I thought that was such a beautiful visual. I laughed at it. And I watched the cartoon and his face is the same, but not quite as real or as great.
The scene in the receiving room where Aladdin as the prince meets Jasmine for the quote-unquote first time. And there's this kind of like screwball vibe where the genie's trying to get him to tell him what to say and he keeps screwing it up. And it just reminds me of like a lot of great like sort of romantic comedies of like the 40s and 50s with that fast talking and just the casual misunderstanding and the conversation getting marbled and you know what you want to say and you keep stepping on your own feet and biting your own tongue. Mm-hmm. That was really well done. It seemed like Guy Ritchie kind of immersed himself, and he gets a co-screenwriting credit somehow.
Yeah, well, I was also impressed how he didn't focus on certain things he usually loves. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the visuals weren't like kind of dark and gritty, and there wasn't like a ton of
well, he managed to action. Hold the camera still for long periods
exactly,
of
and
time.
Yeah, exactly, that sort of thing.
Although I did like the opening where it's kind of like the camera goes through the streets and you see Aladdin pickpocketing and then it goes up to the castle and you see the Sultan and Jafar consulting and it goes further up in the castle and you see Jasmine and then it goes down into the valley to the Cave of Wonder. So you get this nice sort of like panorama of all the main characters and the setup of the world. And it was a very Guy Ritchie-ish shot, but it was also one of the kind of the only like purely Guy Ritchie shots because you know, there's no like handheld scene. Like I was thinking about King Arthur during the sequences where Aladdin's kind of sort of like running through the streets. Where those scenes in King Arthur, where it looks like they were carrying the camera as they ran, that kind of the seasick shot.
Like a lot of his usual films, though, I thought the action, like the stunts, I thought they were great. That first one where Aladdin is fleeing and he like rolls down a vertical wall, that was incredible.
Yeah, Aladdin invented parkour, didn't you know?
It was, well, it sure looked like it. But yeah, I agree with Adam A. Donaldson. There is some characters that are just nothing. But if you like Aladdin or Disney, I'd say check it out.
All right, we'll leave it there. And if you liked our show, you can always listen to us again. You can find us on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com, or you can download this episode or other episodes from the Guelph Politicast channel. They are posted every Friday on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find us on social media on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show or on Twitter at just End Credits Radio. You can find me at GuelphPolitico.ca. That's my political site. Or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. And Peter, where can people find you on the internet?
Mr. Talarak, a YouTube and Twitter.
Is there going to be new Mr. Talarak stuff?
I'm working full time in the summer, but maybe maybe soon.
All right.
Our Twitter, though, is always active. Listeners.
Very true. It is always active. And CFRU is always active. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will see you next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for end credits, and we will call it there.